Attitude, Musikerinnen und Musiker mit Haltung, stelle ich euch heute zum allerersten Mal im neuen Jahrzehnt am 01.01.2020 wieder vor. Ich bin Nico, in diesem Podcast führe ich Gespräche mit Künstlerinnen oder Leuten, die irgendwas machen im Rahmen der musikalischen Kunst und die etwas Bedeutendes machen neben der Musik. Wie zum Beispiel die Dresdner Banda Internationale, in der Dresdner mit Geflüchteten gemeinsam musizieren, oder der Folkband Deitsch, die sich die Mühe machte, alte deutsche Volksmusiklieder aus den Archiven zu kramen und wieder zum musikalischen Leben zu erwecken. Beide habe ich in den letzten Episoden bereits interviewen dürfen, oder eben wie Jeff Burner in dieser Episode, der seine Stimme nicht verstummen lässt, weder in der Musik noch in der Politik. Wenn ihr noch Bands kennt, Musikerinnen oder Musiker, die eine Episode verdient hätten, meldet euch entweder über atti-tune@gmx.de oder schreibt es in die Kommentare. Ich traf den kanadischen Akkordeonisten Jeff Burner vor seinem Konzert in München. Das war am 30. November 2019. Klezmer-Punk nennt er als Jude seine Musik. Aber Musik ist nicht das Einzige, was er macht. Nein, er macht auch Politik, war früher bei den Grünen in Kanada und war jetzt beteiligt, eine neue Partei zu gründen. Und wie er das zusammenbringt, Musik machen und politisch aktiv zu sein, fasst er so zusammen. Hier ein kurzer Ausschnitt aus dem Gespräch mit ihm, das ihr dann gleich in ganzer Länge hören könnt.
When I see things in my world where power is not distributed fairly and people's lives are being destroyed so that other people can have more than they need, it makes me upset. And so these feelings wind up going into my songs, and they wind up going into my political way of being in the world. It's all the same thing for me.
Den Tipp, Jeff zu interviewen, bekam ich von Kata, die beim Bellevue de Monaco tätig ist. Danke, Kata. Das Bellevue de Monaco ist ein neu gegründetes Wohn- und Kulturzentrum für Geflüchtete und interessierte Münchnerinnen und Münchner im Herzen der Stadt. So heißt es auf der Webseite von Bellevue de Monaco. Dort gibt es unter anderem auch Konzerte, so eben wie das von Jeff Burner. Jeff ist eine total spannende Person. Als kanadischer Jude hat er einen besonderen Blick auf das, was in Israel vor sich geht. Was politisch vorgeht, gerade auch in Europa, beschäftigt ihn sehr. Deshalb auch der Titel von seinem neuen Album Grand Hotel Cosmopolis. Das gibt es wirklich in Augsburg. Es ist ein ganz ähnliches Haus wie das Bellevue de Monaco. Mehr dazu später. Stammhörer wissen, was jetzt kommt. Wie wichtig ist Jeff Haltung? Ein Ausschnitt aus unserem Gespräch.
The most important attitude is to say, you should be for yourself. You know, you have a right to have a voice, and everyone has a right to have a voice.
Am Anfang unseres Gesprächs wollte ich erstmal wissen, wie es bei ihm angefangen hat, wie er auf die Idee gekommen ist, Musik zu machen. Ein paar Jahrzehnte ist das inzwischen her.
I wanted to be in a band as a teenager, and I played in with other people, and eventually we formed a band called Terror of Tiny Town, and we were together for my 20s. And when the band broke up, I was the singer of this rock band, and I sometimes played accordion. But when the band broke up, I started playing solo accordion, and I was surprised to see things started to really pick up when I was doing this strange thing. And then I began as a singer-songwriter, and then I started to become more interested in Jewish music and trying to write in that style. And then slowly I've learned more and more about how to play in that style. You know, it's music that I heard growing up, but it wasn't something people thought was something you would do something to make a living. So now this is what I do mostly, I think, I try to play in a kind of Jewish style and write also in a kind of Jewish style a lot of the time.
Jeff ist Jude in Kanada. Auch diese Herkunft hat ihn beeinflusst.
I'm an Ashkenaz Jew, from originally people came from Eastern Europe, and in that was mostly in the 19th century they came to Canada, and I grew up in Vancouver in a Jewish house, but not a Orthodox Jewish house, in a neighborhood that wasn't Jewish. So we were outsiders in the community we lived in, but there was a Jewish community, and we had family in Vancouver, and had a bar mitzvah. I went to Hebrew school and all those things. So that's my Jewish background, I guess.
Were you interested in things like politics in Israel, for example, or anything which the Jewish community concerned?
Well, going to Hebrew school in the 1970s and 80s, there was a lot of emphasis on Israel as something that was an important part of being Jewish. Zionism was something I was raised with, and I've only slowly let go of over time. I don't consider myself a Zionist. I'm not an anti-Zionist. I don't believe in destroying the state of Israel, but I'm not sure it was that great an idea. I understand why it seemed like a really good idea at the time, but now the results don't look so good. So I'm an anti-nationalist, so I'm just not a big fan of the leadership of the state of Israel. So that's where I'm at this point. I think a lot of the things I was taught when I was a child turned out not to be correct. And there were a lot of things I was not taught about how the state of Israel treated Arab people in the region.
Jeff Berner war vor Jahren bereits auch in der Politik aktiv, abseits von der Musik. Zum Beispiel bei den kanadischen Grünen. Wie kam er dazu?
Well, we joined in my friends and I in the late 80s, and the science was very clear about the climate catastrophe in the late 80s, and we wanted to do something, and it was only the Greens who seemed to be interested in doing something, and we thought that the Greens, where we lived, opposed endless economic growth as the goal of society. This was very important. So we joined the Green Party in my part of the world and tried to make our Green Party a socialist Green Party that defended the poor first. And so that's what we tried to do. And my friends and I controlled it for a little while, and then some other people came along and took control, so we left the Green Party. And the Green Party right now in Canada is a bit of a disappointment because it doesn't really seem to be very interested in defending the people with the least amount of money and power. They seem to be mostly concerned with, I don't know, defending the interests of people who like to go camping or something like that. I don't know. So we formed a new party called the BC Eco-Socialists last month, and now we have hundreds of new members, and we have all these people getting involved, and it's quite exciting, this new thing that we've got going.
How would you describe the work as a politician?
Well, I just think that I try to live like an integrated life where everything is all connected to everything else, and I try to be who I'm supposed to be in my house or on the street or when I make art or when I engage with other people who are trying to make the world better. It's all the same thing, trying to behave ethically as a person. So when I see things in my world where power is not distributed fairly and people's lives are being destroyed so that other people can have more than they need, it makes me upset. And so these feelings wind up going into my songs, and they wind up going into my you know, political way of being in the world, it's all the same thing for me, you know. You try to oppose human suffering or talk about human suffering, and you try to talk about the great things about being human and the great things about being with together with people. And these are all the, you try to sing about life, you know, and I'm trying to sing about life on many levels, you know.
Ich wollte wissen, was konkret damals für die Grünen gemacht hat und was jetzt für seine neue Partei macht. Das Erstaunliche, trennt das nicht von seiner künstlerischen Tätigkeit als Musiker.
I did a lot of different things and I do a lot of different things. Sometimes it's sitting with people and talking about what it is that we need to do and what is important. And sometimes it's because I think a lot of what I'm doing is connecting people to each other and to their own feelings as well. So I go out and I might play a small town in my part of the world, and then I play songs about how people are being fucked over or things like that, and then somebody comes up and says, that song really meant a lot to me because of what's going on in my hometown. And I go, oh yeah, I know somebody else in the town I just played in who just said the same thing to me. You should meet them because you guys would get along, you know. So like the things like that is part of my role. And because my music gets some publicity and stuff like that, I can talk about politics and the new party and other things, and it gets into the entertainment section of the newspaper when it wouldn't get into the news section of the newspaper. So my role is kind of amorphous, but I'm kind of a cheerleader and a matchmaker and a late night drinker and teller of stories. And that's sometimes when those late night drinking sessions are when people say, I don't know what we're going to do. You know, I don't know what to do, or this is what happened to me. And then I can say, yes, people are telling me about this experience everywhere I'm going. When people say, oh, the local music venue closed down, they're going to bulldoze it and turn it into expensive flats. If they say that to me in Oslo, or they say that to me in my hometown of Vancouver, or across the country in Toronto, or in Munich, it's like, yeah, you're not the only one who lost their local music venue to the developers. This is what's going on all over the world. So it's part of those are some of the things I get to do when I connect. And then when I go into a song and I get into the feelings of the song and I have faith that the people in the audience will feel that feeling with me, that's also connecting. I connect with people. You play a show, and even if it's 500 people or 10 people, you've done this magic thing where people are motivated by an invisible force, some ideas, and they get off their couch, they turn off the Netflix, and they come out to the bar and to listen to sit and have air vibrate at them. You know, I make the air vibrate with my voice and my accordion, and the vibrations travel invisibly across space into their ears and into their brains as feelings and ideas, and then they go and do things again. Like, and it's magic, you know, it's a magical thing. So, and when it's a demonstration where there's music and there's singing and there's and everyone is together, it's the same thing. Somebody has transmitted this idea. We're all going to go on the street on Friday and stop the roads because we don't want to die from the climate catastrophe. Where did all these people come from? They're just suddenly there. It's magic, you know? So that's what I'm doing. You know, I want to be part of that magical connection, you know?
Jeff war dann irgendwann auch mal frustriert von der Entwicklung der Grünen in Kanada und gründete mit anderen eine neue Partei. Die nennt sich BC, das steht für British Columbia, Eco-Socialists. Warum, wollte ich wissen.
We just saw 120,000 people walking in the streets of Vancouver saying, why isn't anybody doing something about the climate crisis? And we see all these people demonstrating about the housing crisis, and there's really no one in Canada to vote for. There's no one for them to vote for who reflects their views. And there are so many of them that we just thought, well, and many of them are so young. So because we're in our 40s, me and my friends who set up the party, we just thought, well, this is not our first rodeo. We've done this before. We know how to fill out all the stupid little forms that the government makes if you want to make a party and all these things. If we could just make the infrastructure, make these tools, we could hand them to these young people and say, okay, take these tools and go get them, you know? And this is what we're trying to do.
How successful is it so far?
It's overwhelming, actually. It's kind of frightening, and it's triggering some imposter syndrome in me, you know, and some, I'm like, because it's so fast. Like, hundreds of people are signing up to be members and getting in touch on the Facebook and all the other things like that. And we've got money coming in, and it's happening very fast. So we have to make sure that we don't blow it, you know. People are now putting their trust and their hope in us quickly. So I've been very surprised. Like, I send somebody a link and say, here's where the policy is. Tell us what we've done wrong and what we can fix about it. And then people write back and say, I'm having trouble signing up on the website. I'm ready to sign up. Why isn't this working? Okay, we got to sign up. We fix the website, you know. And now it's working, and it's exciting and frightening, you know, because we know we've seen all these other parties rise up. They're supposed to represent the people's views, and then they get big, and then suddenly they're saying the same things that all the other guys were saying before. I'm really worried about making sure that this doesn't happen, at least for a while anyway.
Ich habe ihn gefragt, wenn er einmal mit dem gleichnamigen Song als Whiskey Ruby auftritt und dann als Politiker, ob das nicht zwei unterschiedliche Rollen sind. Kann man beide dann noch glaubwürdig vertreten?
Would you say it's always the case that you are taken seriously if you're appearing as a politician in a way?
I don't know. I mean, I just, some people respond to what I'm doing, and some people, laugh at it. I mean, a lot of the people who laugh at it also are enjoying it, so I don't mind if people laugh about it. I think I'm a ridiculous figure, you know, so I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm wrong a lot of the time, and I do still drink a lot sometimes, and so if people find me to be a ridiculous figure, they are correct. So, you know, the only thing is that I've been more or less trying to say the same thing about valuing human beings and their even weak in human beings for a long time, so people kind of know what they're getting with me now, and I think that is maybe helpful with the politics. It's just because they know that it would be very strange if I suddenly started saying, well, we have to be pragmatic and we have to keep taxes low and we have to protect investors and stuff. That would be very it seems even unlikely to other people that I would do that suddenly, you know, after all these years. So I think it's partly helpful that I'm a ridiculous figure, that I don't have a lot of dignity, you know. I'm just a silly little man with an accordion. So I'm obviously not trying to be a leader that people put their identity or their beliefs into, you know? So I think it's a plus that I'm ridiculous.
Ein Gewinn, der so affig rüberkommt, kann man so sehen, finde ich. Jeff macht aber noch mehr als Politik.
I've also read that you were involved in some festivals, the Accordion Noir Festival and the Music Waste Festival.
Well, in both those cases, these festivals, which have now lasted a long time, the first time they happened, it was like a gig. We had a gig booked. I was one of the acts at the doing the gig in the Accordion Noir Festival. It was my show at the Railway Club, which is a place with the capacity of, I don't know, 120 people. And we just said, let's call it the Accordion Noir Festival. And so we did. And we had all weird accordion bands in one night, and we just called it the Accordion Noir Festival. And then the next year there was two nights, and then the next year there was a whole weekend of these things, and then it just kept going. And Music Waste is a festival in Vancouver where, again, there was four bands. My band was one of them, and we didn't get into the proper music conference, which was called Music West. There was a fancy dancy music conference, you know, like North by North, like South by Southwest or something like that, and they called it Music West, and they would have big people from the industry and all these things, and we didn't get in, so we just booked a gig at the same time and called it Music Waste. And now Music West, people don't even remember that it existed. And Music Waste is a festival every year that has like 100 bands playing at it. So it's just a, both of these things are a situation where if you don't know that things shouldn't work and you just kind of start, it's really surprising where they can go sometimes, you know?
Jeff und seine Band haben jetzt gerade ein neues Album veröffentlicht. Grand Hotel Cosmopolis benannt nach einem einmaligen Projekt. Wer es nicht kennt, eine kurze Erklärung. Ein leerstehendes Altenheim in Augsburg, vor Jahren umgebaut, von Freiwilligen als Unterkunft für Geflüchtete. Aber auch ganz normale Gäste können dort übernachten. Geflüchtete nehmen teil am Angebot, das das Grand Hotel den Gästen anbietet. Sei es bei der Musik oder beim Kulinarischen. Ein echtes Vorzeigeprojekt in Sachen Integration. Woran sich übrigens auch das Münchner Bellevue de Monaco orientiert hat, wo Jeff nach unserem Gespräch ja dann auch aufgetreten ist. Ich habe ihn gefragt, ob er denn im Augsburger Grand Hotel Cosmopolis tatsächlich schon mal gewesen ist.
Yes, I mean, we were just there today for our day off, and I was first there before it really started. These people who put on my show in Augsburg years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I don't know, they said, after the show, we want to show you something. So we'll bring some beers and we'll show you this new thing we're doing. And we brought the beers and we were in, and they said, look at this building. And it was an abandoned high school in the middle of Augsburg, and it was empty. And they took us in and they gave us some beers, and they said, okay, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to have refugees and migrants living for free in this part, and in this part we're going to make it into a traveler's hostel, and then the idea is that money will come into the hostel, and that will help pay for the building and everything, and maybe some of the people who are refugees can earn some money working in the hotel, and this is going to be, and there'll be also gigs, and there'll be lectures, and there'll be lots of culture, and it'll all be in one place in the middle of Augsburg. And we said, well, sure, you know, that's going to work. That's a huge, and we'd never heard of anything like it before, me and the band. But we came back 2 years later, and it was running. It was up and going, and it looked beautiful. And they had transformed the building into a beautiful space from a brutalist, boring 1960s school architecture to like something else. So something organic and human. So it was just mind blowing what they'd done, and they've survived for many years now. Of course, it's always a crisis to crisis, you know, situation with when you're not trying to make a profit and you're trying to do something to help people. But now other places have sprung up that have studied it. My understanding is the place we're playing tonight, Bellevue de Monaco, is an outgrowth of the Grand Hotel in Augsburg, which is amazing, you know, because usually it's the smaller places that copied the bigger places, you know, but there's a place in Munich that's going, oh, the people in Augsburg have figured this out. We'll copy this. You know, it's pretty cool to see things like that.
So that means you found friends in Augsburg?
Oh, yeah. There's some great friends in Augsburg, people I've known for a long time. And every time we come back there, we make more friends, interesting musicians and artists. And it's a great nexus for creative work. So I really wanted – I see it like the Grand Hotel Cosmopolis in a lot of ways is a model for how we might live together better, where we ask what is needed, what do people need, and then we – just provide it the best we can. To a certain extent, it's not the best thing, because the best thing would be if the entire government did that and you didn't need... So like Grand Hotel Cosmopolis is like a bandage on a bleeding wound, you know? But it's a beautiful bandage, you know? And it's helped. It's made a difference. It would be nice if we didn't need to put... If we didn't have the wound. If people just arrived in Europe or in other rich countries like Canada and said, I need help. And then we just said, okay, here's the help you need, because why wouldn't we do that? So it would be great if the whole society was geared towards doing that. But at least these people at the Grand Hotel are saying that themselves. They're trying, you know?
Ein Ereignis wird Jeff nicht vergessen aus dem Grand Hotel.
Well, in the morning, I think the police came to take away a mother and her children, and the staff wanted to stop the police from coming in, so they got everyone from the building out to block the police from coming in. And they banged on all the doors, and they woke everyone up and said, come out, come out. And Briga didn't know what was going on, but they were telling her they needed her to come out. So she came out, and they gave her a bicycle. Everyone was holding bicycles to block the path of the police car and stuff. And all the time, I was sleeping in this room called the box room. Every room is different that you stay in, and this one is a box inside the room. So it was soundproof. So all the banging didn't wake me up. I slept through the whole thing. And Briga and the others stopped the police from coming in. And the family got to stay. So that was really dramatic.
Briga spielt Violine in Jeff's band.
It was dramatic to find out about it for me when I went down for coffee at 11:30 in the morning. And Briga was like, you'll never guess, where were you? You don't... Like, so it was pretty funny.
How did it work that the name of that hotel became the title of your album?
Well, it just seemed like I was making another album, and I wanted to make it about some of my themes that I talk about a lot, about the parallels between the Jewish experience in the 1930s and 40s, especially, and the experience of other traveling people now. And I wanted to make these connections. And then you have this example of German people who have made a decision to be welcoming to those people who are running for their lives. And and for Jews, we were running for our lives in the 1930s and 40s, and nobody really let us in or took care of us. So the idea that there are these German people who are turning it around and doing what you're supposed to do, it was really a perfect thematic unifier for my album. And also the fact that it's the Grand Hotel Cosmopolis really got me, because this word cosmopolitan is something that's been used as a bad word about people who are not from the same ethnic group as most of the people in the region. You say, oh, the city is cosmopolitan. It means it's kind of decadent or corrupt, or there's too many different kinds of people, and it's not orderly, you know. But it also means sophisticated and delightful at the same time. Cosmopolitan can also mean, like, so... So you see, like, the fascist ideas are about monoculture and about the opposite of cosmopolitan, about being, you know, about denying knowledge and denying, you know, many different points of view and stuff. So it was just a perfect unifier, the Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, a safe space for people running for their lives the way the Jews have so many times had to do, that it was just perfect for me. Do you know what I mean?
Jeff hat das Grand Hotel gefragt, ob es okay für sie ist, wenn sein Album nach ihnen benennt.
Oh yeah, I knew that I should ask permission before I started doing this stuff. And they were very enthusiastic about it, so that was really nice.
Would you say there's some musical influence that from the Grand Hotel, which is now being heard on your album?
Yeah, I would say that that there is some influence. I mean, the guy Manny, Manfred Hoar, who is the punk rock social worker who connected us with the Grand Hotel, he's been putting on concerts in Augsburg and the area since like 1981. He's maybe put on 1,000 different concerts. And he started with punk rock, but he branched out to all kinds of different kinds of music. So Manny would play me the music that he'd brought through Augsburg, sometimes playing at the Grand Hotel, sometimes playing other places. And he would, and so we heard about things like Russian bands like Iva Nova or Dobry Noch. Or, you know, this is where I found, I heard again about this guy, Daniel Kahn, who plays klezmer music, who lives in Berlin. You know, it's like, you should listen to Daniel Kahn. And this is where I found, I first saw the paintings of Nikolai Kopeikin, who did the cover painting for my album, We Are Going to Bremen. So, yeah, it's been a big conversation with Manny and his comrades at the Grand Hotel over the last maybe 10 years. It's been a very rewarding conversation for me.
Hier ein kurzer Ausschnitt vom Titelsong auf dem Album.
Come on with me, and when you get done, go make a Grand Hotel Cosmopolis of your own. Go make a Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, sponsored by the purple moon and shooters. We're at the Grand Hotel Cosmopolis.
Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, erschien bei Cox Records. Jeff hat's geschrieben. Go and make a Grand Hotel Cosmopolis of your own. Das Grand Hotel als Beispiel, wie es auch anderswo ausschauen könnte, der Umgang der Menschen mit Fremden, die einfach Hilfe suchen. Ich wollte wissen, auf welche Reaktionen sie mit ihrem neuen Album gestoßen sind und mit der Message, die damit verknüpft ist.
Well, it's only just came out November 1st, so it's only been a month, but The newspaper's reviews have said that it's my best work so far, and there's a lot of positive reaction to it. I haven't gotten any kind of, like, slagging off review yet for any of it, knock wood, you know. And the audience at the Grand Hotel when we played there was fantastic. I mean, it was such a two nights of amazing party with all these people. We collaborated with some wonderful Kenyan artists who played with us, and there was a choir from the Grand Hotel that sang with us, and then these musicians from Berlin, Psycho and Plastic, came and played with us on the second night, and everyone was dancing and everyone was having a wonderful time. It was a dream come true. It was just exactly as I hoped it would be, and Magdalena Hutter is she shot a whole bunch of footage of all this, and she's going to make a video for it that I hope will also be a great big advertisement for the Grand Hotel and its philosophy. And it's my hope that, like, it's my moonshot, you know, it's like the possibility, you know, like more than like that the record could be a hit, whatever that is these days, is that if the record and the touring and the video could result in somebody somewhere making one more Grand Hotel, that would be the hit That would be the legacy, the success of the record. And then I could take my kids there one day to see. That's there it is, you know. I would love for that to happen. So I hope, I mean, the odds are low, you know. But it's the odds are low for any kind of musical success. So this is what I'm shooting for, you know what I mean?
Why are you making this Klezmer Punk?
Well, we put a name on it because you have to put a name on it to try to sell it and get people to come to the shows. I mean, as a kid, I was a punk rock kid, and I listened to lots of other kinds of music, but I loved the energy and the ideas and the rudeness of punk. And then I heard the Pogues, and I saw what they did with Irish music, and after some time, I just thought, well, and there's other bands, that friends of mine, that did it with country music also. They took punk energy and ideas, and they put it in the traditional music, you know, and then it would sound more traditional than some of the big selling folk music that was had a little more mayonnaise on it, you know. And so I thought, well, maybe there's a way to approach this with Jewish music, and that's what I tried to do. But really, when I got into it and I did a lot of it, I found out that the old stuff is raw and full of mistakes and full of ideas and feelings. All the things that I liked about punk rock as a kid are actually what make good people's music, you know. So now my aspiration is to be a traditional Jewish musician, the way one, you know, because there's a long tradition of wine cellar singers in Jewish music. There's a long tradition of drinking songs and political songs, and so my ambition is to be now a link in a traditional chain, where it's not like a situation where people say, it's not your grandfather's klezmer music. It's like, no, it is. It's like, it's the way people have always done good people's music, with like rudeness and all the parts of life thrown into it, the sexuality and food and politics, everything all in a big mix that makes you feel like, okay, everybody's worked a hard day or a hard week. Let's all get together and have a good time and talk about what's been, you know, feel the feelings that we've been storing up while we've been just getting through the day, you know. And so that's what I want to do. I want to be that kind of musician.
Ich hatte ein paar seiner Texte vorher mal durchgelesen, zum Beispiel auch die von dem Song Lucky Goddamn Jew, von dem Album Whiskey Ruby aus dem Jahr 2005 mit dieser Textzeile. Erschienen bei Black Can Music, Lyrics und Musik von Jeff Burner. Das klingt nicht wirklich so, als hätte Netanyahu diese Zeilen geschrieben. Nein, Jeff geht mehr als kritisch damit um, was in Israel politisch stattfindet. Er erklärt, was er mit diesem Song gemeint hat.
I'm not a fan of the governments of Israel. I don't have a problem with Israelis or the Jewish people in Israel, but the government has been really oppressive, especially to Arab people, Palestinian people. So I think it's and there's a lot of parallels between the way Israeli government treats Palestinian people and the way the Canadian government treats Indigenous people in Canada. So, you know, there's a lot to do with trying to oppose domination. You know, that it's not right for people to dominate other people, not in a country, not in school, and not in the home. That there shouldn't be domination from one person to another.
And the song Vilna, I suppose it had something to do with missing some kind of home. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the song is about. It's about missing your hometown. Vilna is Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. And my family came from Lithuania a long time ago. And they moved through Vilna to leave. They must have gone to the city. I don't know that they lived there. Or maybe some of them did. I don't know if there's any of our family left there now.
Hier ein kleiner Ausschnitt vom Song Vilna auf dem Album Grand Hotel Cosmopolis.
Vilner Gesslach, Vilner Teichen, Vilna Wälder Bag und Zoo. Eppes Neuet, Eppes Bringt sich noch die Zeiten von Amor.
Veröffentlicht bei Cooks Records, geschrieben von Jeff himself, gesungen in Jiddisch, übersetzt. Die Gässchen von Vilnius, die Flüsse in Vilnius, die Wälder, die Hügel und die Täler von Vilnius. Irgendwas jagt mich, irgendwas sehnt sich nach den Tagen, wie sie früher mal waren. Als ich den ganzen Song durchgehört habe, wird schon klar, was damit gemeint gewesen ist. Ein Song für eine alte Heimat, in der man kaum oder vielleicht nie gewesen ist, zu der man eigentlich nur noch eine Verbindung hat durch Erzählungen oder vielleicht sogar nur noch in der Fantasie.
I've read stories written about life in the Jewish community in Vilna in the early 20th century. And I do feel a connection to the way people are in the stories, the way they behave, the way they talk. And it's a connection I don't feel to Vancouver, to the city I was born and raised in. Vancouver is a kind of a cold city, and it's a colonial city, and it's messed up, and it is, I guess, my home, but I've never felt at home there. So I sing that song Vilna, and I just think about what that would feel like. And I also just think about the beauty of the melody of the song, because it's just a perfectly written song. It's one of the great songs of the world. So to have one of the great songs of the world kind of belong to me in a way, be part of my heritage, it feels like a great treasure that I should do something with as a singer, you know. Somebody should be singing that song because it's beautiful.
You sing it in Yiddish. Mm-hmm. Are there different accents maybe in Yiddish? I mean, it's spoken nowadays, I think, almost all over the world.
Well, for me, Yiddish is a language that my grandparents spoke when they didn't want the children to understand what they were saying. So it was seen as something that needed to be left behind if we were going to get further, higher up in Canadian society. So it was tragic. When a language is lost, it's a tragedy. And so I'm working really hard to learn Yiddish and to learn how to say the words properly. And some of my teachers are Litvak Yiddish speakers, which that is the dialect from Lithuania. And some of them, it's more Ukrainian. And some of them are Polish. But I would try to sing Vilna in a Litvak accent as I've been given to understand it. But if you listen to my records, when I start singing Yiddish in 2011 on the Victory Party thing, my accent's, it's not so good. And it sounds like an Englishman singing in Yiddish. And it's, so you can hear as part of my artistic process, this reclaiming of this thing that belongs to me, but at first is difficult for me. And slowly my accent has gotten better and more authentic to Yiddish speakers, and it's my ambition to be fluent in Yiddish and to speak it in the way that my grandparents would have spoken it as best I can. But this and this process will take me some time. But I hope that I can build, if I'm given enough time on this planet, I can get there so that I can be a reasonably good teacher of the next generation who maybe can learn it from the cradle, you know, which is how I wish that I had learned it.
I also was astounded because your albums are completely free on the internet. On your website, I think you can also download it without paying anything for it.
Most of the people who like my stuff do pay for it. It's really not, there isn't an issue where there's thousands of people just taking my art for free. It's an option for people. It's kind of like if somebody wants my album so badly that they steal it from the merch table, it's like, wow, they must really like my music to take that kind of risk. Like, okay, you know, I don't really feel like there's thousands of people ripping me off, enjoying klezmer music for free and laughing at me. You know what I mean? Most of the people who go to hear me, they're like, they want to give me money so that I can keep doing this thing. So it's not really a problem, you know. I mean, there's no money to be made from Spotify. You're basically giving the thing away for free because those bastards take all the money, you know. And so it's a situation where I just give people the option to give me money, you know, for it is more like what I'm doing, you know, rather than just give Spotify whatever it is, 10 euros a month, and I get nothing, you know.
How would you say... How important is it for a musician nowadays to have an attitude?
Well, I mean, my feeling is that everyone has an attitude and of some kind, and then you just have to choose what your attitude will be. I mean, my attitude is that I'm not very interested in the things that modern commercial music seems to be interested in. My attitude is also realistic, that I'm a 48-year-old bald man traveling around with an accordion shouting at people, and this is not ever going to get me, you know, on the halftime show at the Super Bowl, you know. So it's like I'm just grateful that I get to make music and not do another job, and travel and connect with people. It's the best job in the world. So I just, I'm going to do it as long as I'm allowed to keep doing it. You must choose your attitude. What will your attitude be? Is your attitude one of like, oh God, I hope I have a hit, or if I don't have a hit record, I should quit because I'm no good, you know? Then that's one attitude to have. If your attitude is, oh, I should make music that's as nice as possible, that doesn't offend too many people, and then maybe no one will be angry at me, that's an attitude, you know? So my attitude is just, fuck it, I might as well make the music that I like, you know, that I want to hear. When you say how important is attitude, it's like, it's very important to be conscious of what your attitude is going to be when you go into this.
I also meant social and political attitude in a way, you know, which you, with your political engagement, definitely have, you know.
I think it's important to engage with the world that you're living in and not pretend that things are not there, you know. I think it's important to put as much of your world into your music and as much of who you are into your music as you can. You know, it's not, and so that's, I think, the attitude that people should have, you know. And and the other thing about attitude is it's really important to have an attitude where you say, no, you can't silence me because I'm too young or too old or not good looking enough to be a music star, or not well practiced enough to be a virtuoso, or not singing perfectly enough to be a diva, or all these things that they try to silence you with these, you don't belong. The attitude, the most important attitude, is to say you should be for yourself You know, you should you have a right to have a voice, and everyone has a right to have a voice.
Last question: have you ever had some kind of confrontations with either your music or with your political engagement, or with some other kind of things that you try to fulfill and which didn't work?
Jeez, I mean, there's lots of songs that I don't play anymore because I don't agree with myself anymore, you know, where people have said, you know, in that song you probably weren't trying to make people feel bad about this, but you kind of did. And I mean, you, oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, that one's going in the bin. You know, there's failure, you know, is constant. It's part of this thing. So it's hard to pick out any one example of all of the constant churning of failure that's part of making art, you know. It's hard to say. There's so many, you know. And then sometimes when people reject my music because it's too left-wing or too confrontational of authority, that's a relief. That's like, oh, okay, now I'm doing the right thing. It's when people reject it because I messed up and I hurt somebody who I didn't want to hurt, or I got a message across that I wasn't trying to get across. That's when I feel like a failure, you know?
Wow, das ist mal eine Aussage. Wenn die Leute denken, was ich singe, sei zu linksradikal, dann weiß ich, dass ich die richtigen Worte gefunden habe. Ein klasse Typ, der Jeff Burner. Kann toll erzählen und eckt auch gerne an. War einfach klasse, ihm zuzuhören. Und ich wünsche ihm, dass er noch viele tolle Alben rausgibt und dass er uns damit auch noch eine ganze Weile auf Initiativen hinweisen kann, wie beim Grand Hotel Cosmopolis, die immerhin noch eine Lösung anbieten können für größere gesellschaftliche Probleme, die heutzutage immer wieder auftreten. Das war Attitude, einen Musiker mit Haltung namens Jeff Burner durfte ich euch vorstellen. Wie am Anfang schon erwähnt, schreibt mir, wenn ihr Künstler, Musikerin, Musiker kennt, die eine Episode verdient haben, entweder an atti-tune@gmx.de oder ihr schreibt es in die Kommentare. Bis dahin, bewahrt Haltung und stay attituned.